friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA, and as you know, there is no ever any nepotism or any, you know, shining light on any particular part of Ireland, but let me welcome, first of all, my friend of many years, and he is the Chief Executive, Tourism Ireland Worldwide, Niall Gibbons. How are you?
I'm great. Great to see you. Great to be back in New York, Adrian. Thanks for having me on the show. Great to be here at a time when tourism is going so well.
I know. But before we get into the bragging rights, and you have plenty of them, are you going around the world trying to pick up relatives hither and yon? I mean, the stories, you know, of particularly one in particular, which I'll only pick as an example, considering that it does have to do with Mayo. Tell us about how that came about. It's a story that indeed we carried ourselves on Facebook. And, but it's a good one.
It's one of these funny small world stories, only in Ireland, as the saying would go. I was over at a major travel and tourism exhibition in London called World Travel Market, and our team secured an interview with Richard Quest on CNN, so that's a big coup to get for Ireland,
sure.
Broadcasting live. And before I went on air, a woman who works for CNN came up to me and mentioned that her grandfather, or her mother, I should say, was a Gibbons from Mayo. So when we used to ask a few questions, as the Irish do, curiously asking of where they're from, we discovered that our grandfathers were brothers 105 years ago. And through my census records, I had a photograph from 1913 that an uncle had given me of our shared great-grandfather, John Gibbons, who was born in 1860, yeah. Standing outside the house in 1913. So I sent that through to her, confirmed all the information. And I don't post personal things on social media. I do post all the tourism news that I have. But just an interesting diaspora type of story that I decided to put it up there. And it had 250,000 views between LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. And I was astounded at the sort of response. And what was interesting was that a couple of other people came forward who saw the picture, and have since confirmed another person whose grandmother was in the picture as well, and another two people whose grandfather was in the picture that were related to Geraldine Finnegan, the woman I met in London. So I've met about five or six cousins since then who all now want me to go back down to Mayo for the reunion. They all think actually I might lift the curse off Mayo and they might bring Sam home, but that might be a thing too far.
Yeah, it might be a bit of a stretch, but... having said that, though, it is, it's almost, you know, incredible, but it does happen. And that should ring a bell, I think, with a lot of tourists who are heading for Ireland and may, this is not new, you know, through the decades, if not the century, people going to Ireland saying, I hope that I can catch up with or find a relative. And it's almost like, you know, the bee's nest. You gather one and you find that there are loads of them.
Yeah, and I think Ireland is a great place for doing that. And there are certain counties that have a clear, strong diaspora link overseas. Mayo is obviously one of those. I mean, they are spread everywhere. And they have got a good network, actually, out there. But I think, you know, new resources that are there online, like the census records now in Ireland, great job done by the National Archives. So all the census records are there from 1901 and 1911, if you want to do a search. There are further records available that are slightly incomplete, but they're much better sort of set of records now than they were 10 years ago. I think, secondly, you've also resources like Epic Ireland, the Irish diaspora experience, now based in Dublin, which, you know, people can go in and, I suppose, immerse themselves in what the diaspora experience really is. And if they want to do a bit of professional searching, that's there too. The one thing I learned about that particular story, and I told it to my staff, particularly the younger staff, was why did I make that connection? I made the connection because we followed through on a conversation. That was all. She came up to me and said her granny was from Mayo, or grandfather, she said. Was from Mayo, and I could have just said, well, that's very interesting, and swap cards, but I just was curious, and I just asked questions, and I said, that's interesting, and we found out that we came from the same village, and I didn't have to go and get the census record, but I did, and I try to demonstrate to our staff that that sort of lesson applies to every aspect of business. If you don't sometimes follow through in the conversation, nothing might happen, but you might make the sale. You never know if you keep on following through hard enough. And I think in that case, it was a nice personal connection that brought me closer to people that I sort of hadn't been connected with at all, at that particular side of the family. So you can go online and do so much, so to speak, but I think there's no better way than actually to connect with people that you realize that 100 years ago you were very, very close to.
And, you know, there is now an emphasis, and I must say that I am, you know, very happy to be and have the support of Quinnipiac University, of Ireland House, NYU, who actually not only, you know, skimmed, the story of Ireland's great hunger, the famine, but who have actually unfolded and continue to unfold a whole pile of our history that wasn't, not an awful lot of attention was paid to it. Even in my time growing up in Ireland, this was something that said a prayer and really wanted to forget about. But now, the great number of people who are discovering that during that period of time, the million who came our way, they have roots and they have a lot. And somewhere again, that may have gotten lost in the generations because somebody who came here as a survivor of the famine didn't know that much and let sleeping dogs lie, as it were. But it is a great, one of the huge resources, you know, that we have.
And it's great that people like Quinnipiac did that. I was very fortunate to be there at the opening of that.
That's right.
When Leo Varadkar was the Minister for Tourism, Transport and Sport at the time, and we went up and he spoke at the opening of it. And it's quite a moving event because it's always interesting to see, you know, people in other countries who interpret the story. And I think, yeah, dark part of history. It's amazing to think that Ireland's population was 8 million back then. Right. And by the end of the 1920s, it was down around 3 million. So there's been a big scattering of seeds around the world. And I think from a tourism perspective, it's probably best example in the positive sense was the gathering, which you and I talked about on this show back in 2013. And that was a great call.
That was a milestone.
Which people really responded to. And
yeah.
I mean, I meet the diaspora in all different parts of the world. And I have to say that there is a sense amongst the overseas network of people that I talk to is that that's probably one of the best calling cards that the Irish government ever issued.
It surely was. It's great that you're in town, and we are not going to be rattled at all by your being here to talk about the global plan that you have in place, because, you know, Alison Metcalf and many of us here wish a good luck on that one, but we would like to afford you the opportunity to brag about what has happened from North America over the last, you know, few years.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story, and full credit to Alison and the team here. It has been truly phenomenal what's happened. I mean, again, going back to around the time of the gathering, 2013, I was over here, you interviewed me on the show. Enda Kenny was Taoiseach at the time, and then we bragged about the huge figure of 1 million visitors spending $1 billion, mm-hmm. and we thought that was an amazing milestone. And when the final figures are counted now for 2018, we're fairly confident that number now have reached 2 million in North America, which is a phenomenal story. No one ever foresaw that level of growth in such a short space of time. A terrific team out here led by Alison, really energetic, working all four corners of the market. The air access picture has been very strong. Ireland certainly in vogue. Big investment by American companies into Ireland, which helps too.
Yes.
But, you know, gateways have opened up that we didn't know we'd see Los Angeles coming back, San Francisco, but I never expected Seattle.
Yeah.
This year we've got Minneapolis. I was with American Airlines last Friday celebrating the fact they'll be opening Dallas this year, which was really on our list.
Right.
So that's in addition to all the traditional gateways that are there already. So 18 gateways from the United States this year, 24 from the US and Canada combined, compared to 10 back in 2011.
Yeah.
So big, big change, and it gives us a great opportunity to launch our campaign here tomorrow night, Fill Your Heart with Ireland, and allow Alison to go on and conquer the world here.
I want to address something that for many of us, particularly those who come from rural Ireland, to say, you know, that despite the tremendous success of tourism to the island of Ireland, and the ever-growing, statistics would show that more and more and more people, are visiting Ireland and spending a lot of money, that there are some areas that those who live there and those who, you know, are looking at this success and saying, wait a minute, we're not getting a lot out of that. Maybe that should lead us into what your, 2019 outreach is, and it's not just more of the same, obviously, the cities and some of the massive and terrific, again, ever-growing, tourism destinations, including, the Wild Atlantic Way in Ireland's ancient east. What about the smaller people who haven't had much of a crack at any of that? What's your plan?
Well, it's a fair question, and I think, we've seen an amazing renaissance in tourism in general. Last year, 11.2 million people would have visited the island of Ireland, population of about 6.5 million. It's a very strong ratio, and you're quite right. I mean, urban areas like Dublin, Cork, Galway, are doing exceptionally well, very, very strong, and a lot of other areas doing well too. But people would like to see better regional spread, better season extension. And that's a major focus of our marketing plans for this year. So you won't really see Tourism Ireland out there during the peak season, so to speak, marketing Ireland. We don't really need to, because the season sells very well itself during the summer. However, I mean, there are great opportunities around quarter four, quarter one, building that off-peak business. And you can see it even around Ireland at the moment, particularly over the Christmas period. The number of visitors from North America is exceptionally strong. But it's working around festivals like Halloween, like the New Year's Festival, like the St. Patrick's Festival. And our colleagues back in Fulge, Ireland, back at home, are putting more money in to beef those festivals up. Food is going to be another very strong theme this year. There'll be a big season of food around September and October, which will beef up existing food festivals, food trails, celebrity chefs, cookery schools. So you will see food is a very strong theme of the tourism promotion. And also working with airlines as well to encourage them to promote really good value fares in the off-peak, because that drives business too. So, I think there's really good affordability, there's really great value available in Ireland, particularly in those off-peak periods. That'll be a big part of the strategy for 2019, underpinned by our new campaign, Fill Your Heart with Ireland. And you were at the launch of our Jump Into Ireland campaign, which has served us very well over the last 7 years. This is a campaign that's tested really well in the United States before it went out, and it's been out on TV already, and we'll have a very strong presence here during the course of 2019, and we'll be redeveloping our Ireland.com websites as well to make it very accessible for consumers, and expanding our presence around the globe too.
Yeah, on your website, on every program I've ever done, I might be able to pick something or other that I think will be appealing, and I do that before I go to your website, because actually it is, and I maintain it is, it's the Bible of travel to Ireland. It's an encyclopedia. Many people who, want to know a lot about Ireland, who don't have any particular yen or plan to get there, go to the website. It's riddled, it's a fountain of information on Ireland, and on, the smaller areas, the outside the pale, outside the major cities. And for many years, Fáilte Ireland, in fact, took a lot of pride in what was turned out to be very successful. Bring people, bring tourists into an area, not for a single one-day experience, but yes, you can highlight just about in any part of Ireland something worth seeing. But also, when they're there, you've got to come up, you've got to be creative. This is not like going to the Empire State Building and taking the elevator and then saying, that's it. How has that developed? And does your new game plan, contribute to that?
Yeah, well, look, our Ireland.com suite of websites is going to be completely redeveloped through the course of 2019. It'll be very much focused on, you know, developing experiences for the consumer, allowing them to plan their holiday. It'll be much more targeted so we can get the right message to the right person at the right time. And technology is just moving on so rapidly that you have to keep on investing here. I mean, Ireland.com is the only resource around the globe that has all the information needs for the whole island of Ireland in one place. So whether you want to book your flight, accommodation, if you're looking to plan your itinerary, if you're looking for experiences like the Wild Atlantic Way, this is the only place where they're all there and they're all very credible. Built on over many years' experience by all the great staff here in Tourism Ireland.
You know, you have, and Alison Metcalf indeed has pointed out the tremendous following, and for those who go to Ireland, and for those who watch whatever of the great. Movies and television series and everything, they want to go see those spots. They want, to be a part of it. That has been wildly successful. In what order, or can you rattle off like a few of the spots where movies were made and what kind of magnet that turned out to be in bringing people into those areas?
The two obvious and most recent examples are Game of Thrones and Star Wars. Yeah. Game of Thrones been the biggest series ever now on the small screen.
I know.
Star Wars been the most successful one on the big screen. And we have Game of Thrones filmed in Northern Ireland. The last episodes go out this year, Series 8. And we've been working with HBO for quite a number of years now. And we have a license agreement with HBO that allows us to use the logo, to use the term Northern Ireland Game of Thrones territory. And Game of Thrones is also filmed in Iceland and Spain and other destinations, but we got in first, fortunately. And we've had a really successful run. And there's a whole Game of Thrones tour in Northern Ireland now that, it's on Ireland.com and you can book it online. And it's proving really, really popular. And there will be a new Game of Thrones experience opening at the end of 2019 in County Down, which I got the chance to visit recently. So that's really positive news. Star Wars, brought the whole Wild Atlantic Way to life in a very different way. I think, the Irish experience for people like Mark Hamill was hugely positive. They were tweeting and sending out all their social media posts. So really good for the southwest of Ireland particularly. It was filmed in Skellig Michael, which is limited access. There's only about 15,000 people can go. But it was more about that. It was more about, the whole area itself, about the Wild Atlantic Way. Malin Head has been very successful out of it too. There are other series that may not be as well known. For example, Vikings has been filmed in Ireland as well, and that's proving very popular too. And we did a campaign on that most recently in the UK. And don't forget, this didn't start yesterday or the day before.
Right.
You go back to the likes of The Quiet Man, Ryan's Daughter, Saving Private Ryan. There are film tours around Ireland that features all these locations. But I think the most recent ones probably stick in the mind has been the most successful from a tourism perspective.
But when you mention, like The Quiet Man and many of those others from that era, look at the legs that they had, even to this year. One thing we can know is there will be St. Patrick's Day, there will be, the greening of the world, thanks to your good self, and your team in terms of getting that level of interest around the world. And we won't talk about the fact that you were cadging it. You didn't pay much for it to begin with. And if you did, it was only a tip, by comparison. But all of that is now coming into its own and is very much a part of now the same attraction with the highest level of interest that you would have had back in, in the day where John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara, all of those movies, The Quiet Man, still has a level of interest today. Now, many of those who, had visited Ireland at that time or came from Ireland during that period of time, that interest has transcended to their children and now their grandchildren. So we can only imagine, what it's like you know, again, for Game of Thrones, for, you know, for Star Wars, for all of those. That, with the advent and with the success of, you know, internet and with the social media, my God, that has to be fantastic.
It's amazing, yeah. I mean, just to mention The Quiet Man, I mean, the John Ford Film Festival is one of the legacies that has come out of that.
Right.
A number of years ago, Maureen O'Hara was over for it. And so technology does help to sustain these things and bring them to a new generation. Our own platform and social media around the world is very substantial. We had over 20 million visitors come into Ireland.com last year. But on the social media side of things, like on Facebook, for example, there's 4.3 million fans now with Ireland.com, and they have an average of 220 friends each. But between Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Weibo in China, Tencent, if we can get everybody to share and like one thing, everybody, it brings us to an audience of a billion people around the globe. So it's a really powerful tool in influencing people to think about Ireland and put Ireland number one for their holiday choice.
I'm sure, you know, some will say, well, how is it that other destinations in Europe in particular, is it that they didn't move quickly enough? You know, was Tourism Ireland out front and, you know, either took a risk or developed that, and then others said, geez, we should have gotten in the ground floor there while the going was good. Is there a sense that there is a, I'm looking for a word that doesn't imply cuteness, but that somehow Ireland and tourism, and for that matter investment in Northern Ireland, that they had a best foot to put forward to begin with?
I think it's a fair question. My own sense of it is that we have an organization, and you'll see it from talking to Alison here as well, that's very agile, fleet of foot, that moves quickly and adapts to market conditions. That being said, it couldn't happen if you didn't have a favourable policy framework from the government as well, and they are very well disposed towards tourism. A lot of policy decisions have worked to our advantage, and when you have that backing, it's easier to get things done on a day-to-day basis. When you look at other tourist boards around the world, the ones that would impress us most, and we do meet with them, we're all friendly rivals, so to speak, but certainly Tourism New Zealand is one that we're always looking at each other, because they have very similar examples on film tourism. Things like sustainability are important, and they've got a very clean, green image as well, and they're very experienced at the tourism game. And Tourism Australia as well is another tourist board that would really impress me again. A wonderful country, problems maybe a bit more remoter than Ireland, but still, you know, tourism an important industry to them, very good at branding. And obviously Visit Britain, then, our next door neighbour as well, would be a strong competitor as well. We've a lot to learn from each other. I spoke at a conference recently with my counterparts there, and they're always mesmerised by Ireland, that how a small island can manage to turn out what it does from a tourism perspective is quite incredible. But I have a very good team around the globe. They work extremely hard, and they operate in 23 markets around the globe, and tell the Irish story so well, and they integrate really well with our other partners like the Department of Foreign Affairs, the IDA, Enterprise Ireland, and indeed on the Northern Ireland side as well, great people like Norman Houston over here in the United States has done a great job selling Northern Ireland too.
Now, we are coming up to into the St. Patrick's season, and for the benefit of those who may not know, the greening project, getting it seems like is additional every year partnerships of those who must feel that it's a good investment for them to actually go out of their way one day a year and have this greening project in so many varied ways. That's a hell of a thing. What is it that that's in it for them? What did they say? First of all, rattle off some of them if you wouldn't mind. Yeah.
Well, just to be, by way of background, the Tourism Ireland Global Greening Project is now in its 10th year. It started for us in 2010 when our team approached the authorities in Sydney. And it was the 200th anniversary of a guy called Governor Lachlan Macquarie of New South Wales held a reception for Irish expats. And on this 200th anniversary, they said, would you green up the Sydney Opera House for us? And they agreed to do it. And it was a photograph at a very dark time in our economic history that garnered an awful lot of emotion back home to think that another country would actually do this in our honour.
Yeah.
So from then on, we said, well, let's give it a go at doing a few other things like the London Eye and the Empire State Building, which already actually did go green. But we have a whole list of 304 last year, and it's everything from the Statue of Christ the Redeemer in Brazil, the Pyramids of Egypt, the London Eye, the Sydney Opera House, and in fairness, the Sky Tower in Auckland, where our Consul General, Rodney Welch, actually did get lit up in 2009. So it's probably a big tribute to our diaspora because, you know, it just requires an ask. So another good example is Gerald Lawless, who you know, works out in Dubai, ran the Jumeirah Group for years, and built the Burj Al Arab, a very iconic building. I mean, I had lunch with Gerald, and I just asked him, "Would you think about lighting it up green?" And green in the Muslim world obviously conjures up other issues. But he did approach Sheikh Mohammed over there, and you know, at the end of the day, this is a tribute to the Irish and what they've done, and it's just another symbol of the Irish strength in different places around the world and the level of influence that they have. But it's a nice project because it's not one that we've gone out and really spent much money on. It's really a tribute to the values of our patron saint. Started at a time when Ireland was in deep difficulty. And if you look at some of the examples of success, the Statue of Christ the Redeemer in Brazil was lit up green by the Archbishop of Rio de Janeiro, who runs the statue. And that was because of the work of Irish missionaries 100 years ago for the poor. And Table Mountain in South Africa lit up green. That's a UNESCO World Heritage Site on the back of the work that the St. Patrick's Trust did building houses for the poor in South Africa. So I think that's very consistent with who we are. And from a tourism perspective, obviously, it comes at a good time of the year. That's when people are thinking about winter holidays. And Ireland ends up trending on social media because of all these global icons there lighting up green. I never thought in my wildest dreams that I'd see Nelson's Column and Trafalgar Square lighting up green on St. Patrick's Day. But there you are.
Let me ask you also about the outreach, and let's just talk about the new global outreach. Obviously, the Irish government, in pouring yet an additional 10 million euro into the advertising, promotional, marketing pot, which is already very substantial, is that primarily to enter new markets, or is some of this to expand on the markets that are already very successful?
It's a combination of both. First of all, we really welcome the additional investment. It's a terrific step forward, and it's a real vote of confidence in the tourism industry as a whole. It'll certainly see us continue what's called our path to market diversification, investing in markets which see longer staying and higher spending visitors come. So we put additional investment here into North America, into mainland Europe. Britain obviously has got some uncertainty regarding Brexit at the moment, so additional funding going in there for Fill Your Heart with Ireland. But it'll also see us expand our operations out in longer haul markets, particularly in Asia, where we're seeing, for example, now for the first time this year, about 45 flights every single week directly coming into Ireland. So you've got carriers now like Emirates and Etihad that have been coming to Ireland for almost a decade, but also now 3 direct flights from China this summer every week from Shenzhen directly, Beijing directly, and also Hong Kong.
Why Ireland? Why is that the destination for a lot of these countries? Because they can't all be coming for a game of golf. What is the main attraction? What is it about Ireland?
Ireland's got a unique, distinct culture, really friendly, warm people. I think it's got a food offering that is really, you know, coming of age, and it's doing exceptionally well. But by and large, it's got the friendliest people in the world, probably, and that's the feedback that we get all the time. And I just hosted a group of people over in the Middle East recently, a group of tour operators that were in Ireland, many of them for the first time, and they were absolutely bowled over by this green island, having come from a desert. And the experiences of the friendliness and the warmth and the distinct sense of history about the place was something that they really found unique. And it's important to bear in mind our industry is one of the biggest in the globe. Last year, 1.4 billion people took trips around the world. And by 2030, that's expected to rise to 1.8 billion. So a lot of countries that traditionally wouldn't have been big travellers are turning into big travellers. And that growth is coming from the likes of Asia and Africa. And they're looking for new destinations. They don't want the same.
Yeah. And obviously, that's you know, it's working.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And there's new exciting things. You mentioned Ireland Global 2025, which has been terrific for Ireland and for tourism. But one of the biggest investments the Irish government are making now is in Tokyo, in an Ireland house, over 40 million euros that will see a very strong Irish presence there. With, you know, the IDA, Enterprise Ireland, the Department of Foreign Affairs, Tourism Ireland, Board BA, all working together in what's the second wealthiest country in the world, or third wealthiest country in the world, that are keen to explore new destinations too. And I think that'll be a bigger player in the travel industry for Ireland in years to come.
Let me ask you about this advertising promotional outfit in London who took a notion, I'm sure, from Star Wars and rigged up, you know, a device on a married couple visiting Ireland for the first time. We let's get past the invasion of privacy aspect of that one there. It wasn't 24 hours anyway, so we'll let that go. Tell us, where did that notion come out of in terms of actually technically measuring responses for people who'd never been in Ireland before? Just give me that. I know you had a hand in that somewhere, and but I want to ask you how much of that had to do with your own.
Well, this is all about our new campaign, Fill Your Heart with Ireland, and we live in a world where people are hyper connected. They're always on their phones, they're always online. And we need to find a way of getting them to maybe switch off a bit and tell them that Ireland is a place they can renew their lust for life, really. That's what the campaign is really all about. And it's something that's believable, it's something that's credible, but how do you get that across in a visual medium when there's an awful lot of other ads that are on there,
right?
And you really grab their attention. So we wanted to do something that was innovative, something a bit different. It's our first new campaign in 7 years. So rather than get actors, we got a real couple to come. So they're actually a couple from Sweden who came to visit Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave them a camera, which we put on their helmet, and we gave them a heart-activated monitor that they had on a watch. And basically the went on their holidays around Ireland, and the camera picked up things that filled their heart. So literally when their heart rate excelled or when it slowed down, the camera turned on and it turned off.
Yeah.
And what it recorded were their passion points from the consumer perspective, because it's important to bear in mind
but
that
this,
we
was not, this is not a put on. This is for actual.
This is for real. So the bottom line is that we in Ireland have lots of views about Ireland, but it's more interesting to hear what the people who don't come from Ireland think about Ireland and what their passion points are. And there were things like landscape is still hugely significant as an influencer, the sense of place, food and drink, screen tourism. So there are really six key passion points that we're using as part of this campaign. And
were those predefined?
No, these are ones. Well, we had them in mind. We know from our research what turns people on to a large extent. But these are ones that really came through from the new campaign. And that's what will be featuring, you know, over the next number of years as we expand Fill Your Heart with Ireland into all our media.
Yeah.
It's breaking in television here in the United States. It's been on ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, coast to coast in our key gateways. It's great to be out in places that we couldn't have gone before. So places like Minneapolis, places like Dallas, which is terrific, beyond the traditional gateways. And that's going out all around the world. So what we talked about before, Jump Into Ireland, is now Fill Your Heart with Ireland, formally launching it here in New York. Our Minister Brendan Griffin is out to do that, by the way, which is really good news.
Yeah.
He's been a great passionate advocate for tourism all around the world. And it's great for that he's been able to put the investment in to allow us to do this. So this will be the message for the next number of years. And the research that we found carried out here in the United States placed it in the top 5% of ads that the agency ever tested, ahead of some other big names that were there too. So that gives us confidence that this will send out a positive message. And I was at the launch of the new Aer Lingus brand last week, by the way, as well, which they've tilted their shamrock and they've put new colours on their planes. It looks really, really good. And I think Fill Your Heart with Ireland was almost written for their brand too.
Yeah, that is great. I almost hate to bring it up, but it's very real and concerning to a lot of people here, is with what looks to be a very messy road coming, you know, with the clock ticking on Brexit, how is that not going to have a very negative effect on Ireland, and we have to assume tourism there? You know, there's a wink and a nod that says, well, you know, Ireland is going to make out anyway, regardless. Is there a concern, though, for this particular year? Is it a shaky situation for the moment? Are people waiting to see what is going to happen? What's the up-to-date analysis here?
Well, look, I mean, we have a political situation that's unfolding. From a tourism perspective, it's our biggest risk as we head into 2019,
yeah,
because it gives rise to uncertainty. When the UK voted to leave the European Union, Tourism Ireland established a Brexit task force in Britain with senior members of the travel and tourism trade from the UK and Ireland. So we've met several times every year. We've evaluated what the key concerns of the industry are. We had a currency issue in year one where there's a depreciation of 20% of sterling against the euro, which made Ireland 20% yeah, more expensive, and we saw a 7% decline in visitors. Fortunately, in 2018, actually, we saw the number of visitors from Britain stabilise, which was good. 2019 is an uncertain year. We don't know for certain how it will unfold from a British perspective. What we do know is that, you know, there are assurances that the common travel area will continue to operate,
yeah,
which will allow people between the UK and Ireland to travel freely between each other's countries. We know that there will be 230,000 seats between the UK and Ireland, like there was last year, every right, week of the summer season. There are big new investments like Irish Continental Group have got the WB Yeats ferry coming on stream, yeah, which will add additional car ferry capacity. And the biggest ever investment in Irish tourism is taking part by a UK company called Centre Parks, investing in Longford,
yeah,
€233 million, creating 1,000 jobs. So they're all the positive things that are there. It is not without its risks. You know, if the 29th of March comes and there isn't a deal, it will give rise to uncertainty that could impact on the industry. And there is a worst case scenario out there that says that could cost the tourism industry €400 million. One hopes that a deal yeah, gets done. I won't comment on whatever the structure that might be, but one hopes that a deal gets done and business can move on.
But is it, is the concern, is that primarily for Britain and Ireland, or is there a ripple effect? How does the rest of the world feel? Those who are going to go to Ireland anyway, that don't have a particular interest, or perhaps any great interest in Brexit or the outcome of Brexit, is that on safe ground?
We're not picking up any significant issues from all the people that we're talking to around the globe that's going to impact on tourism coming into Ireland. We will need to reassure tour operators in certain markets that, yeah, you know, all island itineraries will not be affected. For example, in markets like Germany, you get queries sometimes where an existing tour operator has a travel itinerary that crosses the border. So that's a matter of reassuring people that it's business as usual on the travel side. I think it's just, you know, very important to bear in mind that the British will take about 70 million trips abroad this year. They will still continue to go on their summer holiday to Spain and Turkey, those sun holidays.
Right.
The destinations that are most vulnerable are those that rely on short breaks, because if people are feeling economically vulnerable, they might just pull back on that second or third short break that they traditionally take, and that's what we have to be most careful of.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you for bringing us good tidings at a time when we can use them here, and indeed over on your own side of the Atlantic there are deadlines that will, you know, hopefully have a good and positive result. You might tell us again, as you have every year, finally about North America and where North American tourism to Ireland, how does that rate, and how I know the answer to this, by the way, but anyway, we want to hear it out loud again. North America tourism to Ireland.
Well, put it in perspective, last year we hit the dizzying figure of 2 million visitors from North America to the island of Ireland, spending in excess of €1.8 billion.
Incredible.
The British came in big numbers too, 4.5 million of them. Mm. They spent €1.5 billion. So you can see the economic contribution from North America is exceptionally strong. It grew by 14% during the last year alone. We're looking to grow that again in 2019. I want to thank Alison Metcalf and the great staff that are out here. They've done an amazing job over the last number of years, and thank the travel trade and all the diaspora here as well. Thank yourself and congratulate you for 50 years of broadcasting, I understand, this year.
Yeah,
I was first on the show in 2006. It's always a pleasure to come back and thank you for your support.
Actually, this might be a good time since we're talking about 50 coming up, is that I started off with a couple of very significant sponsors. The first one was Tourism Ireland. And shortly after that, Aer Lingus. But it's a great history. And when we look back and see, my God, what has happened in a half century, how Ireland, how tourism has totally, you know, been to the forefront in good times and in bad. It's a great success story.
And thanks for your contribution to that. 325,000 people now working in our industry across the whole island of Ireland. Team effort.
Incredible. I'll give the chief executive, you know, of Tourism Ireland Worldwide and friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network USA. Where would you go for information about Ireland? No, not necessarily to us, so because we'll give you half a story. For the full story, go to Tourism Ireland's website, ireland.com.